My name's Brian Guthrie. Welcome to Finding Natural Wonder. This is a podcast, the first podcast from Two Rivers Book Festival. You can find out about it on our website, waveneyandblithearts.com, and you can find out more about Waveney and Blythe Arts. But basically, we operate up and down the Waveney and Blythe valleys, so from Diss to the sea. And this podcast is features Ruthie Collins. Ruthie Collins, who is with me here today now, and it's her podcast, Julie. I'm just here to introduce her to you. So, hi, Ruthie.
Hi, Brian.
So, maybe you can explain how you've come to Natural Wonder, to this particular point, and the purpose of this podcast.
So, I was commissioned last year by Norfolk County Council to write a public poem called Dreaming of Albion Sailing with Maud, which is due for install in Great Yarmouth near the train station. And part of the brief was to explore wherries, walks and waterways and really kind of try and inspire connection to the natural world and encourage us to re-engage with nature. So I started writing the poem and researching extensively the landscape of Norfolk and nature in Norfolk and its heritage and wherries and walks, and generated quite a lot of material, which eventually grew into a series of poems, which is currently supported by Arts Council England. And part of my work, the socially engaged part of my work, is I do a lot of work in community settings, helping to make literature accessible to the public. And so through looking at ways to make both nature and writing literature accessible, Natural Wonder as an idea was formed as an outreach project. So so that's how Natural Wonder was formed, really.
Well, that's a very natural and easy match with Waveney and Blythe Arts, because what we're about is connecting all sorts of artistic adventures and activities with the environment and protecting the environment as well in that process. I should say that we should thank Arts Council England, who are supporting this podcast. And we have a partner in this, which is Page Against the Machine, which some of you may know. It's an initiative from the Book Hive in the fine independent bookshop in Norwich. We have, of course, fine independent bookshops in the Waveney and Blythe Valley also. So it's a good match, I think, between Waveney and Blythe Arts, the book festival, and Ruthie and her Natural Wonder project. I know that one of the people you're talking to, I'm looking forward to hearing his contribution, is Nick Hayes, whose book, The Book of Trespass, has made quite a stir when it was published very recently. But I know you've got a number of equally interesting people still. Look forward to hearing that in the podcast. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian. Yes, it's part workshop, part reading retreat, and an invitation to walk and explore the beauty spots surrounding the Waveney River, Borough Castle, Burney Marshes, Braden Water, all stunning treasures, really, part of the Norfolk landscape and very close to where Dreaming of Albion Sailing with Maud will be installed. Start Finding Natural Wonder. I meet Emily Winter, catchment officer from the River Waveney Trust, who grew up in the Waveney Valley. Wonderful to hear her thoughts on the beauty of the Waveney River, its wildlife, as well as the nature-inspired books she'd like to see you read out in nature.
The mantra of the River Waveney Trust is to improve the River Waveney and its catchment for both wildlife and people. So all of our staff and volunteers keen on making sure people can enjoy the River Waveney to its full extent, so promoting walking, paddling, cycling, swimming even, but we're also keen on making sure the River Waveney is healthy and fit for wildlife. And the River Waveney is brilliant in this part of the country for retaining its floodplain meadows. If you think of a lot of the other rivers in East Anglia, a lot of them have the floodplain areas have been converted into arable agriculture, but the River Waveney is really special. You've got otters if you're lucky, kingfishers, you look into the depths of the water and you might see brooch, chub, eels if you're very lucky. I know you're
big fan
you're
of it,
interested
yeah.
in the eels. Yeah, so I've been reading around sustainable agriculture and bringing wildlife back to our countryside as much as possible recently, and one of the first books that started me on that journey was Wilding by Isabella Tree, and she writes really beautifully and poetically about the wildlife that's returned to their estate farm since they ceased all intensive agriculture as we know it, and they literally just have a hands-off approach. They've brought grazing livestock in, so cattle, deer, and they've got Tamworth pigs and ponies as well, but apart from sort of managing that livestock very sensitively, that they really don't do much with the land at all, and they've seen an absolutely astounding return of some really endangered species in our country, things like the turtle dove. It's just amazing to read about what can happen when you really let nature take its course, really. Moving on from that, I delved into Dirt to Soil by Gabe Brown. He's an American writer. It's aimed towards the farmer reader. Even so, I think it's really interesting to read about how farming and agriculture can be tailored in a way to really promote wildlife and promote soil health in particular. So Gabe Brown's farm, he is a farmer himself, isn't quite like Isabella Tree and her husband's estate. I mean, they do still grow crops and farm it in perhaps a more conventional way that we would imagine. Even with his American farm, that they've seen huge changes in like insect life and bird life on their farm. So yeah, it's just really special reading about the potential with our countryside, and you know, it gives you hope for what we can achieve if we really put our minds to it.
Inspiring recommendations there from Emily Winter from the River Waveney Trust. Nature writing as a genre is one of the fastest growing genres in modern day writing. I caught up with Daisy Henwood, arts producer, current writer in residence at Norwich Castle, co-director of Toast Poetry, who has a PhD in environmental literature from UEA, to find out why. What were her thoughts?
It's tempting to say that during lockdown, we saw a massive increase in people's interest in nature and in accessing green spaces. I think that is really important, but actually I think the interest in nature writing has been going on a bit longer than that. And it's exciting because I think what we're seeing at the moment is more of an expansion in what we think nature writing is, who it's by, who it's for. And so we're kind of experiencing this amazing kind of broadening of what we think of when we read about nature and write about nature. And I guess kind of from that, we're seeing people being able to see themselves in nature writing for the first time. And it's a way, I think, of allowing people to experience nature in a way that's not just scientific or not, you're not kind of required to know everything about nature before you access it. And that's the same thing, I think, with some of the nature writing that's coming out at the moment. You're not required to know everything there is to know about trees in order to read about them and then therefore to go out and experiencing them. So I think it's a really exciting time for nature writing at the moment.
And Daisy, what are your book recommendations for us to read out in nature?
I've been kind of dipping in and out of lots of things at the moment. I started reading Amy Nezuko Mutatel's World of Wonders, which is just gorgeous. It's a really beautiful object. I don't know if you've seen the cover of it. It's really kind of colourful, gorgeous kind of animal cover, and she's got all of these illustrations in it that are beautiful. There's this really gorgeous picture of an axolotl, and she's using kind of animals and things in nature to tell stories of her life. And I love the essay form in nature writing. I think it does a really good job of distilling down an experience of a particular thing. And Ross Gay's been doing some interesting stuff with that too. His Book of Delights is another one that I keep dipping in and out of. And it's not nature writing in and of itself. It's just about a kind of daily delights. He wrote an essay every day for a year. And sometimes they're about drinking coffee, but sometimes they're about the community garden that he's involved in. And I think like the way that those essays get put next to each other says something about the way that our understanding of nature might be evolving, and we're sort of thinking about it as a part of our everyday lives rather than something that we kind of go out to experience. At its core, literature can teach us how, like, it can give us a kind of emotional language for approaching nature and for enjoying being outside or encountering anything from a kind of cactus on a windowsill to a massive tree in the middle of nowhere. I think there's a really gorgeous line in Rachel Carson's essay, The Sense of Wonder, that she wrote back in the 50s, and it's an essay about introducing children to nature. And she says something like, it's not half so important to know as it is to feel. And I think that's something that we get from literature and from reading nature writing, that it gives us a way of feeling our engagement with nature rather than having to know like the names of all of the trees and all of the plants. Like, I'm rubbish at that stuff. I don't know every plant in my garden. I don't know the names of all of the flowers when we walk, but I know that I like them and that they make me happy. And that's kind of enough for me to have a meaningful engagement with the natural world. And I think that literature and like nature writing can kind of teach us how to do that and can teach us to care. That's the other thing, right? You have to, in order to get people to protect the landscape, you first have to get them to care about it. And that's what good nature writing, I think, can do.
Do you have any other book recommendations you'd like to share for our listeners?
Tried to pick just one, but I couldn't, so I have two. I can't pick one of just anything. I can't have favourites. I'm too indecisive. So I've got, the first one is The Carrying by Ada Limon. It's a poetry collection. And I come back to this a lot. I read it for the first time a couple of years ago. And she's just got a few poems in there that, like, I teach these poems quite a lot. There's a couple of poems. There's a poem called Dead Stars, and there's a poem called Dandelion Insomnia, and I teach them to teenagers, and I've never had a bad response to them, which is amazing when you think about working with teenagers. They always just get this really lovely, warm response from whoever's reading them, and I think this is one of those books that really teaches you how to care about the world around you in quite ordinary ways. There's poems about suburban nature in there that really teach you that like a dandelion is worth caring about, and it's not a nuisance. It's a kind of wonder.
Yeah.
That's the first one. And then the second one is The Book of Trespass by Nick Hayes, which I read really recently, and is really stuck in my head as a book that I think would be interesting to read outside, because it's all about land ownership, particularly in England, who owns the land that we walk through, on, or next to. And interspersed with these really gorgeous passages. And he's doing a really interesting thing, because he's writing in a kind of classic nature writing style, but about lands that he's not allowed onto, that he's like deliberately trespassing on. And I think that gives a really interesting insight into the way that we are told about the landscape that we live in and what's hidden from us about who owns it and how it's being used and how much of it is actually still inaccessible.
Wonderful suggestions there from Daisy Henwood. And of course, Nick Hayes will be joining us later on in the podcast, Finding Natural Wonder. It was an absolute joy to talk to my next guest, Nisreen Meddings, who is a translator and mother of two. I've been collaborating with to help develop resources for families, children and educators worldwide. Here she is, talking about Lebanese poet Elia Abu Mahdi and his poem, The Fig Tree.
I particularly remember one poem about the tree. It was trying to teach a certain value of generosity and of sharing. But it was told through the life of this tree, how a tree was in a garden of someone. This tree decided not to share its fruit or its shade or its leaves with anybody, because the tree thought, why would I make all these fruits for other people to eat? Why would I, cover myself with leaves for others to benefit from my shade? I'm just going to make my shade just enough for me. So it's going to be just as, drawn on my trunk. And so the tree, spring came, and all the trees in the garden wore their beautiful leaves and beautiful flowers. And that tree was an eyesore. It was standing there like really ugly, And so the owner of the garden didn't like the look of it, so he cut it out and used it to burn fire. So it is, even though it's about the idea of sharing, idea of generosity, the idea of your beauty actually is in what you give and all that, but the story of the tree throughout this, from winter to up to spring, to autumn, to spring, you could actually vividly see what's happening in those seasons. So this is one thing I remember from when I was 7. They make my heart flutter when I listen to them. I just cannot explain to you how they make me feel. I mean, I found them as an audio the other day, and I was playing them. Of course, I'm remembering lots of, I mean, it's my mother, my aunts, we still use this in our conversation. We're talking and we quote from that because it kind of applies to a certain situation. And so we just bring a quotation from a poetry. We used to have, my mother and I, we used to have poetry games, you know, so we would be lying down in beds outside, like in the front garden. We have those like camping beds. So we'll be lying down under the stars and there's no electricity and there's nothing to do. So we were just playing a poetry game. So she would be saying a verse from anywhere. And then I have to catch the last letter on her verse to start a new verse. Doesn't matter where from.
How do you feel about poetry and literature in terms of how it can help our children engage with nature? Not just children, adults too.
I think, first of all, engaging with nature in itself is not even a luxury anymore. It's a necessity. We absolutely need engaging with nature. We cannot not engage with nature in these times. You know, there is an increasing need for us, adults and children. And I think one of the beautiful ways to engage with nature is to link it with literary aspects such as writing and poetry and stuff like that, because it's enjoyable. And it puts it in context as well. You will find, for example, in certain areas where people's livelihood depends on camels. So they are camel. They have herds of camels, and they are and they are nomads mostly. And so when they are traveling, the poems, you will find that the rhythmic scheme has to do with the walking of the camel. It has a specific name, you know. So it has to do with that because it is kind of like more like a wave. It goes like a wave, you know. And so you will, as soon as you hear them, they are done in four verses. So each four verses will have the same rhyme, and then the four, and you would, as soon as you hear them, you would know which area in Sudan this is from. No, I just think that obviously there is a lot of scientific material. There is a lot of factual material. It's quite dry, and I think children need that that aspect of beauty, you know, and nature combined with poetry. What can be more beautiful?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Nasreen. I really appreciate that.
Wonderful. Translator and mother of two, Nasreen Meddings there, discussing how nature can inform the pace and rhythm of a poem, which is one of the writing prompts I'm sharing with those who'd like to try their hand at writing if you're out exploring the landscape surrounding the mouth of the Waveney. You can find these on the accompanying PDF to this podcast on my website, ruthiecollins.co.uk. And just thinking about land and access to nature, this brings me on to our next guest, Nick Hayes, graphic novelist, illustrator and activist, whose book, The Book of Trespass, Crossing the Lines That Divide Us, was nominated for the Gold Dagger for Nonfiction this year in 2021. We have the freedom to roam just 8% of the landscape in the UK and just 3% of our rivers. With campaign Right to Roam, Nick argues that nature should be accessible for all. So I asked him, does he think trespassing is a crime?
No, it's not. It's not going to land you in prison. It's regarded as a tort, which is a sector of law that deals with any harm to the person So the fact that walking, in 10,000 acres of deciduous woodland that you don't own constitutes damage or harm to another person in the same way as defamation or assault is what's called, the lawyers call it, a legal fiction. It's basically, to the common tongue, it's just a made up crock of, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but it's bollocks, basically. We can exist on someone else's land. We can swim in the river that they own. But as long as we're mindful of the ecology, as long as we tread lightly, then we're not causing any damage. And the real damage caused by trespass is to public health.
How do you see literature as helping people to reconnect with nature?
Well, I guess before the Sheffield Tree Campaign, I thought literature and poetry and art were just kind of icing on the cake. And, you could decorate someone's protest poster, but that was about as far as it went. But then Rob McFarlane, who's always been a hero, got in touch for the Sheffield Tree Campaign and said, I've written a poem. We're going to give it to Stag, the Sheffield Tree Action Group. You want to just do a picture around it. So I did. And then we put it in the hands of basically the women that were organising the tree campaign. And what it effectively did, they were able to use Rob's wonderful words, his fame as well, after he said. And people, when he signed the books, people would buy them. And that money went directly to keeping people that were falsely accused and later acquitted of the charges against them for protesting to save trees were dropped with an apology. But it kept them out of prison for those 3, 4, 5, 6 months that they would have been because they were able to pay court costs. So all of a sudden, I kind of thought, well, holy crap, a pretty picture and some words has kept people out of prison. And I think that's really inspired our kind of strategy. My mate, who's running the campaign with me, Kai Shrubsole, he wrote Who Owns England, which came out a year before. We saw that very much as the right jab. And then my book, A Trespass, as the left hook. And then all of a sudden, we're in the ring and we're properly fighting. And that's because, on a practical level, books give you the opportunity to promote the campaign and the issues involved in, they just give you a load more column inches than you would otherwise get. They give you airtime on radio, TV, and like this podcast, I'm able to talk about public access to nature. Our job primarily is to raise the conversation and show to people that far from causing harm in the countryside, actually encouraging more people to nature will encourage a much deeper connection with it.
And Nick, what are your book recommendations to read out in nature?
I'm going to go for two, if that's all right. The absolute best book to read about the philosophy of trespass and the creation of space and different rules and societies are encouraged or banned from it when space turns to place is a book by Jim Crethwell, a geographer and poet, called In Place and Out of Place. But really anything by Jay Griffiths, literally anything. Like, if you find one of her shopping lists, you'll find it much better written than anything else in the English language. But for me, she is the most powerful writer that I've ever read. So I would advise Pip, which is her first book, which is like a feminist history of time. It's a non-fiction book that is a kind of howl against the hierarchy and paternalism of constructed order. And then once that's knocked your socks off, just plow on through chronologically. Literally every word she's written is a brilliant.
Radical thinking there from Nick Hayes, author of the book of Trespass. So my next guest is Jo Hedinger, founder of Page Against the Machine, an initiative from the Book Hive in Norwich. And Jo was actually nominated Best individual bookseller in 2019 and is also a reader for the longlist and shortlist for literary prizes such as the Desmond Elliott Prize. So, Jo, what was the inspiration behind Page Against the Machine?
Yeah, so it was actually inspired by a bit of research that I saw a couple of years ago, back in 2017, in fact. There's a fantastic organisation called The Reading Agency that does a great bit of research every year looking into how people are reading, I suppose, is the great way to say it. It's not what people are reading, but it's how people are reading. So they're reading behaviours, they're reading habits, when they're reading, where they're reading, and importantly, why they might not read as well. Around about two-thirds of the people would love to read more. But then when they're asked why they don't read, they say, oh, it's because I've got too much of a busy schedule. I'm too on, I'm too hectic, I'm too stressed. But then ironically, the reason they want to read, the reason they're saying they want to pick up a book is because they're too busy, they're too stressed, and they feel really anxious. And so I just sort of had the sudden thought that, hang on, the reason people want to read is the reason they can't. And so a really simple idea we had here at the shop was to say, what if we just help people find the time and the space to read? What if we help people think about it a little bit like going to the gym or doing meditation, which is obviously a huge thing now. People find, you know, half an hour a day to sit down and meditate. So seeing reading more as a practice rather than anything else, I guess. And we've been running it ever since. So we started that in 2017 and been running it every single week when I've not been on holiday. And it's been great. It's been absolutely fantastic.
And you've done this throughout the pandemic as well, haven't you? You transitioned onto Zoom throughout the lockdowns when the shop wasn't allowed to have visitors inside. Yeah.
It was a kind of a strange transition to make because obviously the name is a pun, Page Against the Machine. And part of it is, it's not a Luddite thing, it's not anti-technology, but it is about maybe stepping away from your phone and all the numerous notifications we get. So you can have a nice dedicated hour of reading because it feels so good when you do. People are starting to realise that this activity can be amazingly good for you. So it can reduce feelings of loneliness, it can help alleviate stress and mild forms of depression, it can help with your sleeping patterns, it can even give self-esteem a big boost. There's other stuff saying that it's great for your critical thinking, your decision making, your planning, your prioritizing, but it's not just about yourself, it's amazing for your kind of community and social health as well. So in lots of reports, they've had readers reporting a kind of enhanced sense of community spirit, a greater ability to empathise with others. And so you have this amazing deeper understanding of others' identities as well as a kind of better concept of your own self, I guess. And I think what's really interesting, particularly for this podcast, a sense of common purpose. And so when we talk about this connectedness to others, as well as yourself and to ideas, I think reading could be an amazing way to connect with not just other people, but the landscape around you. So again, as I say, it's all in its infancy, this research, but it's out there and it's being proved again and again and again.
So Jo, what are your nature-inspired book recommendations for us to read out in nature?
I think I'd be remiss not to mention Richard Mabey, who, if you don't know about him, he's kind of the father of nature writing, by which I mean, which is a hard one to define, but really kind of memoirs and personal writings about a person's relationship to the world around them, and in particular nature. I first came across him with a book that he wrote called Nature Cure, which is actually about him moving to East Anglia at a very tricky time in his life. He'd written some really brilliant, successful books, but suddenly he fell out of love with writing and fell out of love with nature. And he came to kind of, I guess, recover and find himself again in the landscape of East Anglia, Norfolk and Suffolk. And it's a really beautiful book. So if you're somebody who lives around here, it's an amazing book to read. He's also got a collected essays and articles that he wrote across his entire career called Turning the Boat for Home. My second recommendation is a bit more kind of academic, I suppose, but there's a fantastic philosopher called Timothy Morton, and they wrote an amazing book called Being Ecological, which for anyone out there who is thinking about nature, thinking about climate, and thinking about the very traumatic situation we're in now, I couldn't recommend Tim's book enough. And my final recommendation is more to do with walking, actually. And it's quite an obscure one, but for the kind of people who can't face maybe a full book, or maybe want some little short stories or little, I guess, almost poemly pieces of writing, I couldn't recommend a chap called Robert Walser, who's a Swiss writer, enough, who wrote these little things he called sketches. And often they were him walking out in the mountains of Switzerland, passing by people, looking at the landscape around him. And he'd write these very whimsical, beautiful little pieces, but they have such a kind of innocence and childlike, beautiful look on the world.
Inspiring book recommendations there from Joe Hedinger, founder at Page Against the Machine from Norwich Book Hive. And thanks again to all of our guests on Finding Natural Wonder, Emily Winter, Daisy Henwood, Nisreen Meddings, Nick Hayes and Joe Hedinger. And thanks again to Arts Council England for helping to make this podcast possible. Also to Waveney and Blythe Arts for hosting the Two Rivers Book Festival.